Well, hello everyone, it's Simon Smart for the CPX podcast. Cormac McCarthy's book, The Road, was very well received when it came out in 2006, and it's gained renewed interest with the release of the film starring Viggo Mortensen from The Lord of the Rings and Charlize Theron from all types of different films. To talk about the book and the film, I'm joined by Greg Clark. Greg, not light reading this one, is it?
No, it's not, although it's gripping reading. I was immersed in this. I read it in one sitting, sort of late at night. That was the right time to read it as well. It's a book that really takes you on a journey down the road with the characters.
Yeah, well, for people who don't know the story, we'll just mention that quickly. It's about a father and his 11-year-old son walking the road in post-apocalyptic America. Now, there's been some sort of catastrophic event 10 years previous to where we get to them, and civilization has completely collapsed. These two are on their own, they're travelling the road, and they're just trying to survive. Now, they're in this world of utter chaos and anarchy. There's very little sign of life. Most people have died. There are no crops or animals. Bandits roam the countryside looking for food. It's a seriously dark and violent time. Now, Greg, McCarthy creates this atmosphere really skillfully, doesn't he?
It's a wonderfully written novel. It won the Pulitzer Prize in 2007 for fiction. I think it deserves a prize. He's such a great stylist. He uses these clipped sentences and very sort of short pod-like paragraphs that really draw you into the whole world of disaster and survival. I found it very exciting to read.
Now, literature's your thing. Where does this genre fit into the traditions of literature? Are there echoes of past writers and artists here?
Yeah, there are. There are. He's writing what gets called in extremis writing. So it's about humanity in extreme situations and how you'd respond to that as an artist. So it's a kind of expressionistic writing where you get an extreme subject matter like, you know, a nuclear holocaust or something like that, and you match that with a style that you think it somehow embodies that form of writing. So it fits into the tradition of, say, absurdist theatre, like Samuel Beckett's plays, and actually at many points during The Road I was thinking of Beckett's play Waiting for Godot, which is also about two tramps trying to survive in a kind of wasteland. But also think of novelists like William Golding, who wrote a number of novels about humans in extremis. So Lord of the Flies is the classic one, where, you know, kids are stuck on an island trying to survive. Or he wrote another novel not so well known called Pincher Martin, which is about a man on a rock in the middle of the ocean. He's shipwrecked and he's trying to survive. So there are lots and lots of these in extremis stories that are about human beings who are at deep risk and what happens to them when all of their kind of usual ways of surviving are stripped away. How will they cope? And then the writer picks up a sort of set of conventions to try and communicate to you just how extraordinary the situation is for the characters.
Well, this is right into the heart of this sort of story. Now, you mentioned disasters and so on. End of the world scenarios seem very popular at the moment. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, they are. They've been popular throughout literary history, if I can put it that way. But there really does seem to be fantastic interest at the moment. I mean, at the end of the millennium, you'd think, yes, people were interested then in the idea of the end of the world. Is everything going to fall over at the year 2000? Remember the Y2K bug that never eventuated?
Worried about that one.
Yeah. Our computers survived that. But interestingly enough, into the new millennium, you know, 10 years in now as we are, there's been no let up in the interest in the apocalypse and the end of time.
No. And do you think things the way events have unfolded have played into that?
I do. I think lots of things have happened in the last 10 years that have kept that level of anxiety high for people. So September 11, 2001 is one of the very significant events of our age where people thought that terrible, disastrous events can happen like that, like the destruction of a centre of sort of power in New York. Things like the environmental crisis, I think people are imagining that there could be disaster on a large scale, and not just imagining it, actually seeing it happen. Things like Hurricane Katrina. and other environmental crises around the world. There's also a sense of crisis for those who are confident in, say, our economic situation. You know, the global financial crisis. Is it all going to melt down? In fact, I read an interview with John Hillcoat, the director of the film, who said that he thinks that is the zeitgeist. That's the mood of the times, really, that there's some sort of collapse just around the corner. And we're trying to work out whether we would make it through any large-scale disaster.
Well, this book asks that sort of question in a very deep way, a profound way. Do you think there are any particular events that are really the background to the story? It's not an allegory, but is
no,
it?
No. And in fact, Hillcoat, the director, said some scenes in the movie, which you've seen and I haven't, I'll ask you about it in a minute, are actually drawn from real events, real scenes from Hurricane Katrina. Such as the two boats that are on a highway, I think, that you see in the movie. So they used real footage to suggest it's apocalypse now. This is not the deep future. This is something that you ought to think about now. But what did you make of the movie? You saw it having read the book already. I haven't seen the movie, just read the book. Was it faithful to the book?
It's really faithful to the book. It's a depiction of the book in a way that's so true to it. Usually I come away from that type of thing where you've enjoyed a book and then there's a film made of it, nearly always disappointed because the pictures you have in your mind and so on are not the ones you see in the film, or they've adapted it in a way that sort of doesn't, you don't feel is a good interpretation. I thought it was a brilliant interpretation of it. I heard that McCarthy thought it was very good as well, and the main actor said it was one of the best film adaptations of a book he thinks that he's seen.
There's some really intense scenes in the book. I mean, how did they bring to life? And I'm sorry for listeners who haven't read the book or seen the film. There are some spoilers here, but there are scenes of human beings being locked up for later consumption by people who are looking for food. I mean, how did they depict this sort of stuff without revolting you?
Well, they didn't do it without revolting me. It was in part quite revolting. It's just a frightening scenario that both the author of the book and the makers of the film were able to really create well. You really could feel what it might be like to be existing in this situation where everything's fallen apart. We've got no power, no infrastructure, all the kind of that veneer of civilization has been stripped away, and it gives you a keen sense of what that might actually feel like.
I mean, what did you feel like as you're watching? I mean, you've got young kids, and this is about a father trying to help his young son survive. What was it like?
Well, I really think the main thing about this story is this relationship between the father and the boy. And as a parent of small children, I felt that part keenly. I think anyone can relate to the whole story. I especially felt that bond between the father and his son. I guess the vulnerability of both of them being out in this situation where they really had no control over what was going on. I think part of what this is about is, you're going through things that look like things that we live in now that kind of give us an impression of security and safety, like things like the way our whole cities are set up and so on, but our own homes and all that sort of thing. These guys spend their time rummaging through these places that are now completely bereft of any sense of that. And so that vulnerability of the characters, and especially of the parent, to really be able to protect the kid, which is every parent's hope and desire.
And you get that feeling that it could all be taken away from you, and what would be left when you'd stripped away all the easy access to food and shelter and so forth. This film really seems to be about human nature, doesn't it? I mean, how would a human being survive in those circumstances?
Yeah, I think it is. Interestingly, Cormac McCarthy, the author, says that the book is about human goodness, which is somewhat surprising in a way because it's just a dark picture. It's much more, you mentioned Lord of the Flies, it's much more of that than, the Coral Island sort of thing. This idea that the inherent goodness of human beings put into those extreme situations, some people want to paint a picture of, we'll all form lovely communities and look after each other. This is not like that. And so, there's this sort of fearful element to it. But because the father and son's relationship is in such stark contrast to the violence and the sort of hatred and desperate selfishness that's all around them, it's just a bright light. It's really a beacon in this story. It's a beautiful love story.
The child seems to represent goodness in some way. He's an innocent figure. He's the one who is still thankful for what they have, who cares for others around him, who's worried about other people that they meet on the road, whereas the father sort of moved beyond that and is just trying to survive.
That's right. He's like the only one left. He's an angelic kind of figure. As you say, he's interested in other people, he cares for them, whereas everyone else, including the father, although you see that he does this entirely for the reason of protecting his son, everyone else has got to the point where they've abandoned all that civility and things that we might have, you know, care for the other. It's just literally, you know, kill or be killed, and that's the sort of the world they're in. And so the boy, the father to an extent, but the boy, they carry this sense of something within them that's truly valuable.
Well, there's a phrase, isn't there, that when the son asks the father, you know, why are we going to survive, and why are we still the good guys? We carry the fire.
We carry the fire is a little moment that's big in the book and the film. It's this idea that we carry something within us. Now, your worldview, I guess, will help interpret this for your readers or viewers. Could it be the divine spark, perhaps, or is it just some, you know, the glory of being a human being, or for others, perhaps the image of God. That was more my interpretation, but no. I must admit. But it was this idea that no, we hold something of great value despite the darkness of the human condition.
And the boy always asks, are we still the good guys? And the dad always says, yes.
Yeah, because there's some doubt. There are things that happen that make him doubt that they're still the good guys. This idea that, you know, that shadiness, the shades of dark and light within each human heart, I think it's an important part of the comment McCarthy's making here. Mm.
One of the big sort of themes in the novel is whether the universe is itself meaningful or meaningless, isn't it? Whether there's any purpose. If you look at the destruction that's been wrought on this world, can you really say there's actually anything meaningful about history?
Yeah, that's right. There's this sense that I think if there's no God, does any of this mean anything? Even the relationship between the boy and the father.
Well, the mother actually gives up on that, doesn't she? Just to spoil it for people as well.
Yeah, the father, unlike the mother, feels there's some reason to continue with this protection and this love of the boy. So these existential questions are right there. I'll read just a very short passage from McCarthy's novel just to illustrate this. At one point he says, he walked out into the grey light and stood, and he saw for a brief moment the absolute truth of the world, the cold, relentless circling of the intestate earth, darkness implacable, the blind dogs of the sun in their running, the crushing black vacuum of the universe.
It's a pretty depressing kind of scenario.
What time of night were you reading that, Greg?
Yeah, it was pretty black when I was reading that. Now, the other theme, of course, and this is really the big one, is the God question. And I've been a little surprised, actually, that more critics haven't talked about the whole question of whether there's a God and how you'd make sense of God in a universe like this. So we should talk about it at least. It comes up for you, of course, when you start to look at a world that's devastated. How could there be a sovereign God who cared for this place? Does God have any kind of plan for the world at all? Is there any meaning in all of this suffering? It seems to me that in the novel, the child acts as a kind of conduit of God's voice to the father. He's the means by which you might still get some sense that there is morality and purpose to the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that's right. You could read this a few different ways. Some ways the father is the God figure for the boy, definitely. He's this protector. He exists. He's self-sacrificing. He exists just to protect the boy. He says, yeah, it's my job. I'll kill anyone who touches you. That's my job, kind of thing. But there's this sense of he has this godlike feel about him to the boy. But in another way, the boy is kind of he's almost godlike. There's a moment where they're talking to this old tramp on the road, and the father says, it's almost, there's a bit of playing going on here, and he says, the little boy's a god. And the old man says, Well, I hope that isn't true, because it would be a terrible thing to be on the road with the last God. And it's this moment where, you know, McCarthy's really playing with this idea of God and who, whether he's there or not, and if he is, what is
where you would find the little traces that remain of God in that kind of universe.
That's right.
By the end of the novel, it seems to me that the father has actually become kind of the best approximation of God that the boy is going to get right at the end of the novel. Let me read just a little section from the very last pages of the novel where again, sorry for spoilers, but the father has died and the boy returns to the body and says to him that he'll talk to him every day. And then he leaves to go to this new family he's going to be with. And the woman in the family says, McCarthy says, she would talk to him sometimes about God. He tried to talk to God, but the best thing was to talk to his father. And he did talk to him and he didn't forget. The woman said that was all right. She said that the breath of God was his breath, yet though it passed from man to man through all of time. There's a sense that the father's the access point for the boy to meaning and any sense of hope he's going to have.
It is, and you mentioned critics haven't necessarily talked much about this. It's so there. It's right at the centre of the whole of this book, the God question. It's a little bit ambiguous. By no means does McCarthy come down with any clear ideas that will leave you with a very clear sense of what he believes. But he leaves, I think, anyway, and you read that passage at the end about the breath of God. I think he leaves open the possibility that God is still there. And there's a hopeful note at the end of this book, even though you'd be right to say it's pretty grim in some ways, lots of ways. But there's a hopeful note, and in that sense too, I think it reflects an openness to that possibility of God.
Well, the absolute last paragraph of the book, and we should finish there, is actually a return to thinking about the universe and how it goes on. And though things can't be made right again, Cormac McCarthy would have it, he says, in the deep glens where they lived, all things were older than man, and they hummed of mystery. And there's a sense, I think, you know, for Christians at least, that yes, it's true. There's this complexity to the universe, full of sin and suffering, full of hardship, sometimes incredible catastrophe, and you'd be crying out, wondering where God is. But the mystery that we see in the world is at least revealed to us to some degree in the person of Jesus. And we know God loves us because of the person of Jesus, because of what Jesus did. So I guess for Christians, we cling to that understanding that the mystery, while mysterious, is somehow revealed in Jesus Christ.
I think it fits with the Christian vision of the world, this book. It's beautifully put together, the beautifully written book. The film's just as good, worth delving into and looking at some of those big questions.
And if you're not asking yourself the God question by the end of it, maybe you haven't been paying attention.